Talk at 9
with Gushwell Brooks
on 702
for the curious.
Great one. So we have Nkwazi on the line via Skype. Nkwazi, good evening and thank you for joining us.
Evening to you. How are you?
Great stuff, man. Look, let's kick things off. I mean, decolonizing education. I think I'm one of those people that firmly believes in having a strong definition so that we understand what we are talking about. In this particular instance, when we are talking about decolonizing education, what does it mean? How do we go about that particular process?
First of all, we need to know what is education. Education, as by the book and for myself, is that is the effort that we make to know things so that we can better our lives, individually and communally. So now, if we look at what has been going on, especially when we go back to the 60s when Africa and African countries acquired their independence, we found that things didn't work despite saying that we have attained some development in education. So what I mean here is to question the type of education that we have currently, possibly globally and particularly African, whereby, for example, you find that all epistemes that are used in Africa are from Western countries. So my big argument is that we don't only want to decolonize education, but you also have to deconstruct it and reconstruct it by taking on the what we can call dominant grand narrative, which is the West. So in a nutshell, is to question, to doubt the regime of education that's going on globally.
I hear what you're saying, and obviously to question and to bring into doubt and to reassess, I think you would be a fool not to do that on a regular basis. I think any form of information that you receive, you need to assess based on its facts, based on what it means and how you then, how it impacts you and how you interpret it, et cetera, et cetera. But at the very same time, I think what I'd like to understand from your side then is how do we go about that particular process in an objective manner as to obviously get the best possible results in understanding what it is that we are talking about here?
Oh, it is to rebel against the current regime of education. For example, if you look at many universities in Africa, are still teaching based on what Western colonialists gave them to do. They are not teaching, let's say, Africans to depend on themselves in Africa. For example, from where I'm coming from, you find that an African person before colonization used to function in many ways and very effectively without depending on any person. For example, before the 1884 division and partition of Africa, Africa had never depended on anybody like it currently is. So my big question is that why is Africa desperate and poor at this moment? The answer is simple, because it's working on a wrong kind of education. The education that's more European for the benefit of colonizers, not for the benefit of the colonized. So I'll give you a simple example. In Africa, let's say in Tanzania where I grew up, a person could function as a doctor, as a musician, as a soldier, as many things. So this is now no longer existing. It's lost because of taking on accommodating Western episteme, I would say.
At the same time, I mean, I can't help but then look at Southeast Asia, which has a mixture of developed nations as well as developing nations and some of the poorest countries in the world, whilst also some of the most prosperous, even as developing nations. How then do we then compare to them in terms of education and what education has done? Is their education system different or, has it somehow had a different impact or different understanding in that part of the world, especially in the countries where we see greater development and greater prosperity, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, the difference is just obvious. For example, if you look at China, when Western colonizers came to China, they found that the conditions were different from what they found in Africa. Chinese didn't allow them to dominate everything, for example. they believed that, they still do, that everything Chinese is better than anything else. Something that's different in Africa, whereby everything African was demonized and condemned up to today, I can say. So I can't talk of Asia because I don't have much experience on it. At least I can talk of Africa by looking at why Africa is here. Essentially, if you look at most of my books, my question has been to answer the question, why is Africa poor? Why is Africa discriminated against? Why are Africans suffering? Why, you know, all that kind of questions. So I found that the basic thing that I could start with is to look at the engine that runs things, which is education. That's why I came up with the decolonization of education, doing away with relics and toxicity embedded in the racist dominant grand narrative.
I hear what you're saying, and obviously we do need to look at the grand narrative, as you put it, and obviously what is its tilt, or what is its tinge, for lack of a better term, and what does it inform us of what is right and what is good, what is civilized and what is uncivilized. Obviously, we have to look at that, and I think have to start questioning it. And I think the world, to a large extent, is doing that in this modern era. But at the very same time, what I'd just like to understand then is, and going back to the Southeast Asian question, and why I asked you that Southeast Asian question is because I look at a country like India that has a very strong legacy and tie to its colonial past. You look at many other countries as well, Singapore, for example, Malaysia, and their development, and they're doing pretty well, and they might not be making headline news, unlike China, but they're still doing relatively well. And the key question then is, isn't there any learnings that we can take from them beyond China, but also other countries that we can implement here? And then, you know, to prove your theory, your mechanism, and say that, yes, this is the way forward.
Oh, yeah. Like when you talk of India, for many countries in Africa, it was part of colonization, despite being colonized. For example, when the British colonized Africa, used Indian middlemen, or should I know, middle people, to buy crops from Africa, from Africans, is the way of denying them the right to get the right price. So to me, looking at India individually as a country or a subcontinent, it was an engine of colonialism, because even like in South Africa where you are, Indians were not treated as Africans were treated. Why? Because they were brought or exported by British regime to do their business of colonizing South Africa, not only South Africa, but also other African countries. So the thing I could say about India is that it's a bit decolonized in its way of approaching things. For example, I was born in Tanzania. Mm. It is easy to see a temple, an Indian temple in Tanzania, but you can't see any African institution in India. And I tackled on this issue when I was looking at racism, that I found that the information I gathered from the media, from academic sources, whereby Africans as of now are still discriminated against in India. They are called ABC or apes and such kind of things, whereby Indians in Africa are just treated just like normal people, normal Africans. So when you talk of India and the colonization of Africa, I think India was the engine of colonization too, that the British used to colonize Africa and exploit Africa altogether, I would say.
Okay, to take a step back, I mean, what does that then mean for a country like South Africa? What does it mean for your home country, Tanzania, in terms of decolonized education, and especially this rebellion and then going back and seeking? Because at the very same time, as much as we're going back and seeking, I'm sure a lot of people including probably the president himself of South Africa, would say, well, we currently have the fourth industrial revolution underway. We need education to be able to give us the edge in that particular space. Technological developments, industry, commerce, business, the works, for us to be competitive and to maintain or at least to exceed what we are doing at the moment, we need to educate ourselves. So how do we do that whilst simultaneously, as you said, fighting the system and actually being able to resist the system as you speak?
Yeah, so South Africa is a good example, I could say, because first of all, let us look at who is doing what and for whom in South Africa when it comes to economical growth and whatever, whereby the mammoth kind of percentage of the economy of South Africa is in the hands of the minority white. So to me, the colonization of education, as far as South Africa is concerned, should start with defining the objectives of the production of whatever education as a nation you want to embark on. To me, the education that you have in South Africa that still allows people to use the pigments of their color to judge others, it's not viable. It's not even education. To me, it is ignorance. Because if you look at who is a human, according to the definition of our laws and international laws and national laws, especially when we base our argument on human rights, you wonder why these things are still ongoing. Because we have wrong type of education, which is aimed at benefiting our colonizers for our detriments. Even in South Africa now, as I can say, though I've never lived there, I just look at what Malema says and the poison that is spewing to the people of South Africa and how it is handled. I found that the problem is a type of education that you have, the type of thinking that you still have in South Africa, whereby there is holier than those still going on. So to me, for South Africa, to decolonize itself, it should go to the drawing board. I could say, as far as South Africa is concerned, as an African country, it should at least draw from Ubuntu. And I think if I define even Ubuntu, what it is, you are because I am. I can't be where it's not there. So I think South Africa should go to the drawing board and set the objectives, making sure that it states clearly to whose benefit whatever project is involved in, whether it's education, whether it is economy, whether it's politics, who it should state clearly who is a South African, what the rights does a South African have, what the right does an African have, what the right when it comes to the Africa, it's African continent as it is. I think after looking at such kind of basics, it will be easier for the country to move forward from this kind of racist regime which is still going on.
But I think that a lot of what you're saying there reinforces, unfortunately, a lot of the xenophobia, some would even say Afrophobia, that you are talking about at the very moment. Because as an example, if I can just finish my thought there, one of the biggest things that supposedly drives a lot of what we are supposed to be achieving and doing as South Africans and as Africans more broadly is, for example, that Ubuntu should be informing us. So in other words, all of the plans and the social plans and the political plans the government puts in place sort of speaks to the notion of we are nothing without our people, and therefore we have to try to serve our people. But a lot of the time you find that people are finding ways to shortcut or short circuit the process, and then they're serving themselves and their pockets. The other problem is also that all too often many of my listeners, I'm sure if I open up the lines, will turn around and with all due respect to yourself there, Nkwazi will say, but why is Nkwazi not making these declarations about Tanzania and you know, all these other African people coming to South Africa and causing problems here, etc., etc. Now, that's not a view I hold, and I definitely don't purport that, but it's definitely a view held in South Africa where a lot of people are feeling that they are being placed second and that, yes, South Africans first and everyone else last. And I think that is problematic in itself.
Yeah, you are dead right. If you read my book, Africa Unite or Perish, my argument is that everybody in Africa, regardless is in South Africa, Tanzania, Mozambique, has the right everywhere in Africa. My argument is that to for Africa to move forward like other countries, I'm giving an example of Canada. We have 10 provinces and 3 territories. If you divide Canada into an individual country from what we are, it will be most of the countries here will be poor. So what I said in my Africa Unite or Perish, I'm saying Africans, whether they are black or white or whatever, they should first of all stop of thinking in terms of this colonial mentality of nationalism that comes from the Treaty of Westphalia, which was of course enacted in Europe. So the big argument I'm making, and I'm moving from this book to Africa Unite or Perish, I'm saying if Africa is united, we have 1.something billion. So it will have a say internationally, the same way China does and India. Also, I'm saying the presidents of Africa are the big problems that is causing all this mess, because Africans are ready for the unification of Africa, but our leaders, our presidents, because of their presidents, are not looking at that the way we are doing it. So South Africans, when they are saying, okay, we don't want other people from, let's say, Mozambique or Zimbabwe, they are doing that because of ignorance, because of that toxic and obnoxious kind of education they are still using. If they can't see this big game, that once you unite Africa, it's become a game changer, as far as I can say.
Look, I think it's a long and involved conversation. I think at some point we'll have to probably have a longer chat about this, because obviously there's many questions that I still have. How do we then start plugging? Because from what I understand, there's still an investigative process that we need to undergo to understand what is then the essence of this African education. What does it mean? How? What does it replace? What does it augment? What does it change? And that type of thing. And maybe, you know, it's not the type of thing that one thinks of in those strictest senses sure. of the word. But I mean, that's how I can imagine it, that at some stage something needs to be substituted with something else. And what does it mean yes. to the future? So I guess that's the next conversation to have on this one. Nkwazi, thank you so much for your time. All the best to you, okay?
No problem.
Great one. Thanks. Cheers.
Okay.
There was Nkwazi Nkuzi Mango, author of over 20 books, among which are Africa Reunite or Perish. You heard that one. And is it a global war on terrorism, or a global war over Terra Africana? I don't know if I'm entirely convinced yet, because I think the proof of concept is not, in my opinion, and I'm making that clear, in my opinion, I think we don't have a proof of concept yet. I don't think that we have the substitute yet, and that it still needs to be investigated, which does make me a bit nervous, and makes me nervous from the perspective of when are we going to be in a position